Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why? Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio.
Happy Thursday. Today is April 5th, 2018, and I'm Michelle Pache, filling in for Jeannie. I'm here today with Dr. Michael Rice, and we both warmly welcome you to the show, and thank you for choosing to be with us. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you press 1, that will put you into queue to talk with our host. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. So now let's welcome Michael in support of developing our inner process of Aramaic forgiveness.
Well, thank you, young lady. Welcome. Good to hear your voice. Thank you for being available to pitch in for Jeannie. She is out getting some errands taken care of, and so it's perfect that you were available to do so. And our
my pleasure.
Course in Miracles. Say again?
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Yes. Delighted. Well, our lesson from the course today is another review. It's lesson 86. And there are two of the previous lessons that this particular review covers, and that's lesson 71 and 72. And so before we touch into lesson 71, though, let's look at this idea of what it is, first of all, let's be clear on what it is that causes suffering and pain. You know, the world has told us that somebody out there is the cause of our pain. Somebody out there has to change in order for me to feel good. The world has told us in the extreme, you know, although it talks about a monotheistic system, one creator, most people have two theoses, one for good and one for bad. They got a good God and a bad God. They got one for the things they don't like. And interestingly enough, some people's bad God is somebody else's good God and vice versa. Good God, how crazy is this? Anyway, and we're told in some circles, recognize there are over 38,000 different sects of so-called Christianity. Now, my offering is there can't be 38,000 sects of Christianity. There are 38,000 different beliefs about something, but only one of them, if any of them, can be about what one would term Christianity. And if we look at the man who originated that, and we're not looking from a religious perspective, I think when we go back and we look at Yeshua in the first century Aramaic language, he is the most pragmatic physiologist, psychologist, and geneticist that ever lived. This man knows how the world works, and he knows how to be saved from your insanity. And the only thing you need to be saved from, you know, the theologies that have developed, again, 38,000 different sects, so-called, following this man, but they tell you about this dude with a red suit, a tail, and a pitchfork that's always trying to trick you, that is so slippery and is going to get away with it and finally trap you and send you to a hot, fiery place who, in cooperation with this God for good, created so that you could be tortured for eternity because you're such a bad person. I mean, talk about an insane theology. Let's start with a true theology. Hold a newborn child. Notice the essence of the newborn is love. The scriptures tell us the creator is love. That's it. That's all you need to know. It's what you are. Then if you've lost connection with that, there's something else you need to know. And the something else you need to know is there's a way to remove the things that don't belong so that you can stop creating suffering, pain, and trauma to be saved from. It's all an inside job. In other words, sin is an archery term in Aramaic. When you fire at the bullseye and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper yells sin. You're off the mark. It was originally meant to be positive feedback, as in take another shot. You missed the target of functioning as love. And so sin, I would offer, is there's a good acronym that goes along with that. It's self-imposed nonsense. The only thing you need to be saved from, and the Course uses the word salvation, which has been created by many of the theologies, many of the sects of different religions, as though there's a boogeyman out there to get you. In Aramaic, the word Satan means the resistor, one who misleads. It's not a dude with a red suit, tail, and a pitchfork. And you'll notice almost universally when somebody's in pain and suffering, if you invite them to be responsible for their pain and suffering, they will go into resistance, tell you how they have nothing to do with their suffering. And that's the first half of the definition of Satan from the Aramaic. And then the second half, one who misleads. They'll tell you their whole story about somebody else and how it's all somebody else's fault. Most people in this world are trapped in Satan, the resistor, one who misleads, and they need salvation. They need to be saved from that. But it's not the dude out there. It's the insanity inside of us that creates our suffering and our pain. And so when you look at Yeshua's teaching on forgiveness, you see a tool. And that tool allows you to drill down into the parts of your own mind which are in need of healing. And that healing process is what we would rightfully call salvation, to look at behind what it is that needs to be done. Now, you've heard me several times offer my favorite quote from Carl Jung, and that is where he says, until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives and we will call it fate. And the average person, their definition of fate is somebody else did it to me. Look what they're doing. It's interesting. There's a quote that comes from one of the books of the scriptures that didn't get approved by the Council of Nicaea. It's the Book of Thomas. And it's just perfectly in line with what Carl Jung says. And what it says is, if you bring forth that which is within you, then that which is within you will be your salvation. If you do not bring forth that which is within you, that which is within you destroy you. Book of Thomas. Carl Jung, just right on track. And so the first review lesson, number 71, says only the Creator's plan for salvation, only love's plan for salvation will work. What is that plan? That plan is that I understand what forgiveness means in its original Aramaic context. I utilize forgiveness to uncover the hidden parts of my mind, or what that Book of Thomas says, that which is within me, to uncover that, and I bring it forward in the presence of love. Now, you can stumble over that through some accidental thing. People do that all the time. And they go, oh, look, I got a healing. This thing is no longer an issue in my life. But generally speaking, if you ask them what happened, well, they might have some voodoo answer. You know, somebody laid their hands on me, or somebody did this, or I did that, or I ate this magic potion, or I took this magic pill, or I did this magic chant, or I said this magic prayer, or lots of ideas. If you want a consistent, persistent answer to salvation, to being freed of your own self-inflicted pain, and if you look down through the generations, you'll notice that self-inflicted pain has been going on for many generations. Here's how it works. There's a consistent, persistent tool that was presented called forgiveness, if you use it consistently and persistently, like the tool always works. Now, that doesn't mean that you're only going to do one application of the tool in order to free yourself from this particular pain or this rage or this trauma or this hate or this fear or this grief. But if you will consistently, persistently forgive, and what forgiveness means is that I collapse the surface mind's picture world by perception, and by collapsing, I reach into the root of my pained perception, that which is causing my suffering. I purposely, consciously bring forward the active presence of love as I'm taking that action step, and I now am able to access my mind that I've been hiding from myself that causes my pain. And I get to be free of it. That's the plan. It's that simple. And by the way, if you're new to the show or you haven't been on the show for a while, you can go to the iPhone store if you have an iPhone. You can go to the Android Play Store if you have an Android phone. And you can type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And you'll find a free app that you download. It's totally private. Only one permission is required, and that's permission from the app to use your internet connection. Otherwise, no permissions, no information needed, totally private. It's totally and completely 1,000% yours if you put something into it. Of course, when people get into forgiveness, sometimes it's pretty private stuff. So we want people to be absolutely assured that the only person who has access to what you do with that forgiveness app, and it's the first one the world has ever seen, the only person has access is you. At the end of doing the forgiveness process, if you choose to save that particular wake-up sheet, you can hit a button, print it to a PDF, and save it to your phone or your tablet, whichever you're using on. If you choose to close out the app, it disappears and it's gone. No one has access to it but you. So that will give you a way to consistently, persistently apply forgiveness to that which causes your pain. And it embodies the whole plan, the whole plan. Now, I know there are all kinds of magic words. Some churches have these magic words, and you have to get down on a knee, and you have to be in front of a particular person, and you have to say particular magic words in order for it to happen. And, you know, I if you think about that, you'll notice that all the people that the man Yeshua worked with 2,000 years ago, all the healings he participated in and supported people in doing for themselves, you will notice that none of them followed any of those formulas. And if you believe that theology and you think that theology is true, then what you're saying,
Michael? Ken, it looks like Michael fell off the...
Are you there, Michelle?
Yeah. I think Michael somehow disconnected himself.
Yeah, so he was saying that if you believe that, then you must understand that none of those people were ever saved or going to heaven or whatever, so... He was just pointing out the insanity of some of our culture's belief systems. So hopefully he'll rejoin us, and because I'm not sure that he got all the way through what he wanted to say about the Course in Miracles. But have you checked out the app, Michelle?
Yes, when I was in North Carolina during the intensive, like you, I was doing the beta testing, and they shared that with some clients who gave me some feedback too as they've been using the Android one. And honestly, I have half a dozen people using it regularly and with really good results. And Very, very convenient.
Yeah, I'm thoroughly impressed.
Two thumbs
up. Yeah, I'm thoroughly impressed with the app and the amount of work it took and how beautifully it works on my Apple phone. And so I have several people who have been reporting that they're using it on the Droid, and more people are getting the Apple. So thank you to Jeannie and all the tireless work that went into that. And so do we have somebody who's...
Yeah, we do.
For us?
We sure do. Let's go forward with that. We'll take a caller, and Michael can when he comes for air. So this is area code 905. I've turned on your microphone. Who do we have, and where are you calling?
Happy beautiful day, eh?
That seems to.
Are you there?
Hello?
Yes,
yeah.
Hello.
Hello?
We can hear you.
Did
oh,
you
good.
Recognize that you pressed one?
Happy beautiful day, eh?
Happy beautiful day. Did you understand that Michael has dropped off the call temporarily?
Yes, I did. So I'm wondering if I might just hang in the background if there's somebody else you can go on to.
Sure, Michelle. I'm glad to hear your voice. Actually, I asked about you when I was in North Carolina. I said, hey, we haven't heard from Michelle in a long time. So we'll put you on hold, and we'll take another caller for a moment here. Is that okay with you?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Right. Welcome. Hold on. All right. So this is area code 281. I think maybe Shelley, are you on the air here?
Yes. My name's Jim Cooper of Houston.
Oh, excuse me. Hi. How are you from Houston?
Oh, I'm fine. I just started listening to Mind Shifters Radio a few days ago. A friend of mine, Michael knows her, Brenda of Memphis, suggested I tune in, and she's already got me started with the breathing exercises, you know, breathe energy in and release the tension. And since I started doing that, I've been able to put down the sleeping pills because I suffer from high blood pressure and end-stage kidney disease, and I'm waiting on a transplant. And it's the few days I've been listening and reading and doing the worksheets, it's helped a bunch. I just want to thank everybody that's helped, because Brenda said that there's a lot of positive energy being sent my way.
Well, you're entirely welcome and deserving.
Dealing with-
Have you been doing the worksheets?
Yes, I have. In fact, I'm using the app on my phone because I'm the world's worst about losing stuff I write down. And it's really helped me because I think a lot of my problem is all this rage that I've kept bottled up inside for 60 years.
Well, as we know on this show, we talk about quite a bit people like Dr. Sarno, who used to do back surgery but quit because he realized what he was doing in back surgery wasn't responsible for relieving people's pain. And in one of his books, he says, the vast majority of back pain is unconscious rage. So the more we can identify and dismantle that anger, the healthier we get physically, mentally, and emotionally. So is there something specific that we can support you in today? Questions about the worksheet process or the forgiveness process?
I can't really think of anything right now. I just wanted to call in and thank everybody for the help, and that I have intentions of printing up the worksheets, and I'm going to go to, it's the oldest ancestor I could find here in Texas, and I'm going to burn them and ask them to release me from the rage.
All right, well, that sounds like it's a worthwhile endeavor. And then what I have found is a daily application of the tools in one form or another, whether it's the breathing you were talking about or giving myself an acupressure treatment with simply rubbing the ends of my fingers and breathing, or doing the full-blown worksheet process where I identify the thoughts that are causing the negative emotion, and I identify the goal that's in that thought that's not getting met, and I cancel the thought and the goal, and I ask to be shown the hidden part of my own mind and energy system that's actually creating my pain or my upset, the more I do that, the better the results I get. The more I do that, the more I demonstrate to myself one repetition at a time that I'm able to shift how I feel internally, even though nothing in the outside world has changed. So it takes me from the place where I was absolutely convinced that the reason I'm sad or scared or angry or hurt or shamed has to do with someone or something outside of me, and yet even though none of that's changed, I'm relieved from that discomfort. And every time I do that, it's more of a validation, and I grow stronger in the confidence of the direct observation that, hey, it is an inside job. I'm actually causing my anger. I'm actually causing my fear and pain and sadness. And once I realize, you know what, I don't really like this feeling, I can apply the tools and shift how I'm feeling. So it's wonderful. This is why we do the show, so that people like you can tap in and learn more about it. So please keep us posted. Feel free to call in, ask questions, or give us updates as you make progress.
Okay, well, tell Jeannie or whoever it is in the chat room that for some reason my name there is Mustard Devil. Well, I'll explain to her sometime about that.
Oh, wasn't you telling me that you had gotten knighted or something? Some honor?
Oh, it was. I spent a week in London in 2001 with a young lady. We were at Hampton Court's Palace where Henry VIII lived, and she picked up a jar of the devil's mustard, something made during his time there, and she said, since you can't seem to behave yourself, I'm going to turn this around and call you Mustard Devil, and I've used the name ever since.
That's a pretty remarkable story.
Yes. She introduced me to parts of the UK that I never thought I'd see. And even though the relationship ended years ago, I'm grateful to her for that.
You said your name was Jeff?
Do what now?
You said your name was Jeff?
My first name is James.
James.
First name is James.
Oh, James, okay.
Well, thank you, James. Thanks for the call, and please feel free to call in the future and let us know your progress.
I will. I'll keep in touch. I listen every day now. I'll let y'all go. I've got to go run some errands, but I'll tune in tomorrow.
All right. Blessings.
Blessings. Thank you.
All right. Michelle, what's happening in the chat room and or on the phone queue?
No, the call dropped, and I have no idea why. Our caller, James, call dropped at the same time, so that is very odd thing to happen, but I'm back on, and maybe he'll call back on. And
all right, well, you might want to text Michael and let him know. Maybe he's still talking, thinking, because we know he can talk. We know he can go on and on. And if his phone didn't let him know that the call dropped, he might still be holding forth about any topic at this time. So the number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and Michelle will see that you have a hand up, and we'll announce you by your area code. And we greatly appreciate the calls and specific questions because they help us tap into what you need or help us learn from your questions and your curiosity. We like to point out over and over again that anybody's question is everybody's question. And we all get to learn the more we answer, no matter how basic the question seems to be. We get to learn more as we process through the question, as we get it from your specific vantage point. And we had somebody show up in our Tuesday group who hasn't been there for years and showed up and decided to make some comments and ask some questions and do a worksheet. And it's just delightful to have yet another perspective, yet another set of eyes, yet another set of life experiences that can lead us to a new way to look at the same old material. And when we do that, we benefit. So 563-999-3581, press 1, and Michelle will know you're there and announce you by your area code.
So, Tim, we've got area code 610 joining us right now. Who do we have on the line, please?
Hi, it's your old pal Susan from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Susan. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? And I'm sorry you're having such a lot of snafus with your system there, but I have something that I'd love to hear anybody's ideas on. My rector of our church preached on Easter, and she preached the lyrics of a song by a man named Sidney Carter. It's called Friday Morning. I'd like to read a couple of stanzas of it and hear what you think. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. It was on a Friday morning that they took me from the cell. Now, this person they're taking from the cell is one of the two criminals who were hung by Jesus at the cross. So it was on a Friday morning that they took me from the cell, and I saw they had a carpenter to crucify as well. You can blame it on to Pilate. You can blame it on the Jews. You can blame it on the devil. It's God I accuse. It's God they ought to crucify instead of you and me, I said to the carpenter, hanging on the tree. One more stanza. Now Barabbas was a killer, and they let Barabbas go. But you are being crucified for nothing that I know, and your God is up in heaven, and he doesn't do a thing with a million angels watching, and they never move a wing. It's God they ought to crucify instead of you and me, I said to the carpenter, a-hanging on the tree. That's it. There are other stanzas, but those are, you get the idea.
Yes, I get the idea that that's the lyrics, a fairly modern-day lyricist writing lyrics representing the ego. So what's your question?
Well, I've always thought that since God created everything, that God is the one that prevents helping when there's a Holocaust. I mean, God stands back and lets us screw up. It's just been a sticking point for me. I don't understand. I guess this is if it's God we're crucifying, which is it is, it's Jesus we're crucifying, but it sounds in this song as if God deserves to be crucified because God invented it all.
Okay, so did your minister then preach that we should all be angry at God? Is that what the theme of the sermon was?
No, she didn't. In fact, I should go back and read the sermon because I don't know what her point was, but she read this. These lyrics.
Okay, so by the time you reach the end of that song, do the lyrics turn around to have Jesus talking to the other criminal?
I'll read the last stanza if you want. To hell with Jehovah, to the carpenter I said. I wish that a carpenter had made the world instead. Goodbye and good luck to you. Our ways will soon divide. Remember me tomorrow, the man you hang beside. It's God they ought to crucify instead of you and me, I said to the carpenter hanging on the tree. In other words, no. He just continues with the idea.
Okay. All right. So what I'm taking from your comments and what little I formulated of a question from you is this whole question about why is there evil in the world? Is that what you're asking about?
Yeah, there is evil in the world, and I know that it's there, but it looks as if God made it ultimately.
Oh, Okay, so now can you understand the old line about eating from the tree of good and evil?
What about it? Should I understand?
This old line about eating from the tree of good and evil is that essentially what they were trying to point out is that before man ate from the tree of good and evil, man just accepted everything that was. There wasn't good or bad. It wasn't bad to be naked. It wasn't good to be naked. It was just what it was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So my take on this is that from these ancient spiritual traditions and in-depth philosophical traditions, there's a level of observation that says all events are neutral, and that the label good, bad, evil, etc. is derived, or the meaning for that label is derived for the brain cells, the experience, the interpretation, the judgment that happens inside an individual. So from the most fundamental level to the most advanced level in scale, the people who study this, the people who do their real in-depth spiritual work, they understand all events are neutral. They're given a meaning by the person interpreting them.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say two teams are playing a game in a football field or a basketball court, and the game ends and half of the stands are happy and half of the stands are sad. Now, the stands that are happy, they're happy because their team won. Right? No, that's not why they're happy. And the team that's sad, all those stands on this other side, they're sad because their team lost, right? No, that's not why. Because the very same events were witnessed by both sides. This game went on where points were scored or players were injured or cooperative efforts were applauded or not. And it all happened, and everybody watching had access to the same actuality. So why did half of the stands feel sad and tearful at the end of that event, and half of them feel happy and buoyant and joyful? And because of the interpretation they placed on the events. A ball went through a hoop, or a ball crossed a line. A reasonably young athlete, did a phenomenal event or series of events and physical feats. The team worked beautifully in concert or not. This is just what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
The only way a person could look at that and come away with happiness or sadness is if they hold a specific interpretation for those events.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here's another level, another scale. Here comes a tornado, and it, weather, rain, wind, blows down trees, blows down houses, and leaves an entirely different landscape than what was there before it moved through. Mm. Is that tragic? Well, it depends on your interpretation. Was that tragic or not? So here's one interpretation. It went just an eighth of a mile from the edge of town, and it ripped up a bunch of trees, but it missed the trailer park and it missed all the houses. Oh my gosh, the Lord saved us. This, what a blessing. Our prayers worked. Somebody else looking at that looks at the very same event and says, oh my gosh, God hates me. That was my tree farm that got wiped out. Literally, the tornadoes came through about 4 years ago, it'll be 5 years soon, in southern Illinois, and wiped out neighborhoods and houses. And I watched on the internet coverage, the TV crews went back in when they finally allowed the people to go back in because of the down power lines and the gas lines and everything. And the TV crews went up to this family, and they were standing out by the road in front of a pile of rubble that used to be their house. And the female reporter went up with the microphone to talk to the mother and the father and the kids. And the mother and the father and the kids simply said, "We're just so grateful everyone survived. This is just stuff. It's, you know, it can all be replaced, and, you know, thank the Lord," and whatever. Well, that's not what the news media wants. So they ran down the street to the very next house that is no longer there. It's now a pile of rubble. And there's a family standing in front of that. And these people, "Oh, my God, it's horrible. And we lost everything and all the memories." And they spent 5 minutes with those people talking about how horrible it was, talking about the devastation, talking about the emotional pain. Now, I don't know what better example to give people that it's all an inside job than something like that, where the exact same external factors happened to both families. They lived right next door or right down the street from each other. Both of them lost all of the structure of their house and, you know, 80% of their personal belongings. And one family chooses the interpretation, "We're so grateful to be alive. Life is a joy. We know we can rebuild. That's just stuff. It's the people that are important." And the family right down the street can't find anything to be grateful for, can't appreciate their life and their health and their family's safety, and it's completely on the wood, the cardboard, the photos, the electronics gear, the dollar signs in the bank. So now, please understand, I'm just trying to talk a little bit to open up observation about statements or questions you're making. I don't know the truth of any of this. All I know is that the more I pretend that everybody's doing the best they can every moment with the resources that they have in that time, the better my life gets. I don't know that everything's going to work out for the better than I could ever have planned. I don't know that that's going to happen going forward in my life. I just know that the more I breathe, take a breath, catch myself when I'm upset, and choose that interpretation, the more wonderful little coincidences and blessings I see. And when I look back over my life, the more I realize every time something happened in my life that I thought was horrible and tragic, it eventually led to something better, something I could never have imagined. And eventually led to something so much more expansive, creative, inclusive, loving, joyful, prosperous than anything I had planned. That I have decided in my life, that's how I'm going to approach life when I get up in the morning. I'm going to watch for the early warning signs that I'm living in fear, that anger has come up, that frustration, that bitterness or resentment about the way life has decided to go creeps into my awareness. I'm going to call time out for myself, start using the tools, put away my trifling treasures, cancel everything I think I want, and ask to be shown how to stay calm, how to stay connected to my awareness of my true nature as love, and watch life unfolds in a way that's eventually going to be better than anything I could have planned.
Awesome.
Hey, Michael, you're back. Tim, that was good.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys have been having as much fun as I had doing this dissertation without knowing my phone had cut off, but I just carried on.
So,
enjoyed it. It sounds like you guys have been enjoying something just as much fun.
Well, I would love to answer you, Tim. It's true that this song sounds as if the lyricist has decided that God deserves to be punished because there's a lot of suffering going on. And your take, first you said, "I don't know the ultimate answer of all this, but I do know how I can regard it." That's terrific. I love that. I guess what I'm saying is I don't agree with this being mad at God because God made everything, but just the question, God did make everything. The possibility of evil, even though we can choose to see it as neutral, all the full range, the full spectrum of creation, from what we call darkness to what we call angelic light, was all made by God. Period. And then we just have to pick up our socks and start living our life, and the best possible, just what you said, Tim, that you use the tools and you practice the forgiveness, and that is what you do, and that yields the best possible results. The reason I couldn't even formulate the question except to say that the Course in Miracles is completely non-dual, it appears. I mean, the Course in Miracles is saying God created everything, period. And you say we can't know it all. Of course, the Course in Miracles talks so much. They talk you to this and to that from angles and trying to get you to understand what we can possibly understand. But that miracles is completely non-dual. I'm sure where I feel, or my experience of traditional Christianity, is that it's dual. There's God and there's the devil. Miracles is saying it's all God. I guess that's pretty much it.
Well, I would agree with you that everything I've ever been exposed to in traditional Christianity is all about duality. It's all about an external evil, an internal evil, and an external deity that we have to somehow appease or just suffer the anger of, and that's how they perpetuate their clubs. You have to belong to their clubs. You have to do what they say in order to gain liberty or freedom or life everlasting or redemption from hell and fire and brimstone, which, by the way, none of those concepts, fire and brimstone and hell, none of that existed, 2,000 years ago.
Mm.
That's only a literary creation from like the 1400s or 1500s. So, one of the things that has come to my mind several times, Susan, when listening to you is with your, considerably above average intelligence, is that often when you pose a question in this arena, your questions are coming from a very literalist interpretation base.
Mm.
And so I would suggest that this ability to observe from a broader perspective and to catch the judgment and then question it might be enhanced if you move off of every literalist interpretation you have from the scriptures to a level or two above that and see how it might be metaphorically or symbolically interesting to explore what might have been meant at a different level of teaching than the actual concrete level. For instance, when we teach our children, we say there's good and bad, there's good behavior and bad behavior, there's a Santa Claus, there's a North Pole, he's watching, and then when you're good, he's going to know it, and when you're bad, he's going to know it. That's a very simplistic, literal level of talking about introducing people to good versus evil and watching your behavior. That's very much like, some people say these Ten Commandments are this deep spiritual teaching. And I know people just laugh at that and say, wait a minute, this is an introductory level. This is a preschool level spiritual teaching. Hey, you guys want to get to heaven? First, you got to quit killing yourselves. Then you got to quit having sex with your neighbor's wife. And by the way, stop stealing. This is just like, first, take a breath. In this work, we say the first thing you got to do is take a breath. Well, that's what the Ten Commandments are. They aren't some deep spiritual teaching. It's preschool. And the deeper spiritual teachings that, that you unpack when you take a story like the loaves and the fishes or the Good Samaritan or Goliath, the way Michael talks about the five smooth stones, the deeper symbolic levels of meaning that we can apply to our lives and our actions and our interactions and relationships, that's where the real richness is. It's not in the preschool lessons of he turned water into wine, he told them cast their nets and they got this many fish in this many minutes. So I'll take a breath.
There's an interesting exchange in the movie The Shack that kind of addresses this topic, and just briefly, I just was able to find it online. And the, you know, this man goes through the loss of his daughter and then goes back and confronts this whole experience, and he meets three individuals who represent the creator, the triune aspect, the creator, and then a man who represents Yeshua, and a woman who represents the Holy Spirit. And in that movie, here's how the one piece of the dialogue goes. Here's the representation of Rukka saying to this man, "Today you are the judge. Why are you surprised? You spent your whole life judging everyone and everything, their actions, their motivations, like you could really know them. You make snap judgments about them from the color of their skin, their clothes, their body language. By all accounts, you are a well-practiced expert." Then she lists several types of people, murderers, drug dealers, terrorists, abusive spouses, and asks if they deserve hell. What about the man and what has happened with this man's daughter as he was taken by an abuser? What about the man who preys on innocent little girls? Is that man guilty? What about his father who twisted him? Doesn't the legacy of brokenness go all the way back to Adam? What about God? Isn't he at fault? He set this all in motion, especially if he knew the outcome. Mac then says, "Do you want me to say it? Absolutely, God is to blame." And then the representative of Rukka says, "If it's so easy for you to judge God, you must choose one of your children to spend eternity in heaven, and the other will go to hell. I'm only asking you to do what you believe God does." And he comes back with, "That isn't fair. I can't. Take me. I'll go instead of them. I'll take their place. You take me. You leave my kids alone and you take me." And so Rukka replies to him, "Mackenzie, you've judged your children worthy of love, even if it costs you everything. Now you know what the Creator's heart is."
Hmm.
Max says, "I don't understand how God could have loved Missy, his daughter, and put her through so much horror. She was innocent. Didn't he use her to punish me because it's not fair? She didn't deserve it. Now I might because," and Rukka breaks in and says, "Is that how your God is? God's not like that. This was not God's doing. He doesn't stop a lot of things that cause him pain. What happened to Missy was the work of evil, and no one in your world is immune from it. You want the promise of a pain-free life. There isn't one. As long as there is free will, evil can find its way in." And Max says, "There's got to be a better way." And Rukka says, "There is, but the better way involves trust." So in that particular case, he's being taught the lesson of trust versus judgment, and trying to put it into a context that our 9-bit minds can conceive of instead of reaching beyond what our senses see to a bigger picture. If you haven't seen that film, it's very powerful. It's pretty sweet.
That's amazing. And you probably weren't on when I read the poem that Tim was talking to, right? Because
no, I wasn't.
Was,
no.
That's amazing, because it was exactly what it. The refrain is, "It's God they ought to crucify instead of you and me." I said to the carpenter, hanging on the tree. This is a man who says, you know, I'd like to crucify God because God made it all. And I was saying, well, God did make it all. And I don't know where I sit in all that. But Tim's answer, particularly the answer is of not knowing the full picture, but taking a place of seeing everything as neutral and doing the work yourself as the only answer we can really grab hold of is redeeming right there. For me, it's an answer, and the rest remains a mystery, I guess. Just oh, you just texted me, Michael. Thank you.
I did.
Yeah.
And I'm sending Tim a text of the same. It's a link to that. That's just one part of the conversation, what I read of the review of the movie The Shack.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I was working with a woman at the refugee center who looks to be my age, in her 70s, has a heart condition. I found out her story. She's only in her 50s. She comes from the Sudan or somewhere where there was awful strife a while back. She watched as her husband and children were gunned down, grabbed three nephews who were nearby, stuck them on a bus, and headed out and headed to the United States, somehow found her way here, saying, we're family now. And I come up against this kind of atrocity, and I just don't digest it very well. And so I have to ask a question again. Did God do all this? Did God make all this, make the possibility of atrocities like this? And I don't know if it's a black and white question or not, but in any case, it's good to just have somebody address it and settle me down again, because it's traumatic just listening to stories like that and to imagine what she went through. And she's a wreck. She's struggling. She's working at a dry cleaner. She doesn't know English.
All right, hold it there, Susan.
Yeah.
Don't
Go
you dare it. Accuse me of settling you down.
Okay. All right, Tim.
I did no such thing.
Okay.
And?
Yeah, well...
And you might want to let go of the thought that she's a wreck and be
yes,
a different
I,
space
as soon as
because
I said
that's a different
it, I thought,
space.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That,
correction
that you can
accepted.
Be in the context in the context of the course's lesson today, you can be her salvation. You can be the space of love that brings about that shift in a most
well,
powerful way.
She's
well,
an amazing
her present,
woman.
Susan, her presence in your life has the potential to lead you to salvation, because as you confront this thing that stirs up so much horror in you that you label it an atrocity and all of this, and then you do your work around your fear and your judgment, her presence in your life, you could choose to use that as the stimulus for your healing.
Why is it that I never remember that, Tim? I mean...
Yes, you'll get there.
Yes. Okay, thanks. Yeah. Well, I know that... Was it Michelle who was hanging on the line, eager to ask a question of Michael? I'm going to get right off and let you take that
All right,
over.
Young lady. Blessing.
Yeah, thank you. Okay.
All righty. So, Michelle, we've got about 6 minutes. What's happening? I'll breathe with you, Tim.
It's the best thing I know how to do.
Mm-hmm. It's an awesome gift, isn't it?
Yep.
So, are you with
so
us,
Michelle? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. And, Michael, while you were away doing your lecture by yourself, Michelle called in and she wanted to talk to you specifically.
Oh, okay. My apology. If you're there, Michelle, hit one again.
Oh, well, she is, and she's on.
All right, we've got about 6 minutes. What's on your mind today, Michelle?
Okay. I'm looking to see where I should go next in my healing process based on what's happened or transpired since we talked yesterday. Really quick summary, doing my worksheets. And then I felt, and I'm feeling pretty good even today, I called my mom, and my mom's had a snide remark as soon as she picked up the phone to me. I couldn't even tell you what it was. Just a snide remark. And I said, I just called to talk. And she said, I'm busy. I don't have time to talk to you. That was the end of that. And I've also had a couple phone calls into my daughter, asking her to call and chit-chat, and I haven't heard back. Now, with all of that being said, I maybe had a little twinge of a trigger, but not anything significant. I feel good, and my outtake is I will still reach out to both of them sometime in the future. I don't know when, but I will keep reaching out. Am I on the right?
You're absolutely on the right track, Michelle. Now, that little twinge, you know, there's a kind of a neat line in the Course in Miracles that says the slight, let's see, how does it say it, the slightest irritation can be a cover for the deepest rage. So I'd look at that little twinge and I'd do some work around that. And, you know, because they're in pain, you know, I've used the example before, maybe you've heard me, maybe you haven't, but imagine you're walking down the streets of New York and you're walking past an alley and you hear this whimpering of what is obviously a small child. And you go back, you make your way back in the alley, and hidden behind and underneath a dumpster, you see a child that's maybe 2 years of age, whimpering, cold, freezing. And you reach out to pull the child out from under the dumpster to comfort them. And the child scratches and bites and kicks you and hurts you. Do you shove the child back under the dumpster and walk away? No, it's a two-year-old child. They're in pain. They're in trauma. They're hurting. And yes, they're going to lash out and try to hurt back. But the adult who lives in a human life as the presence of love is going to bring the presence of love to that child until that child is soothed, until that child trusts again, until that child can let go of their terror and their trauma and their pain and can accept the presence of love. You're dealing with an emotionally traumatized level. You know, I don't know if you know this about your mom, but your mom was given up by her mother.
Yes, I do know that.
Did you know that? So
yes.
Your mom is my sister, and I didn't know that until just 3 or 4 years ago. I didn't know that. But what kind of pain goes on, and I don't even know at what age that happened. What kind of pain goes on for someone whose mother gives them up? And if she, and I can only say from my experience with your mom, you know, knowing her for several decades, that I don't think she's ever approached or looked at or dealt with any of that trauma. That's in your genes, and you've dealt with it. That's in your daughter's genes, and she hasn't dealt with it. She's now going through probably some of the trauma genetically that happened with your mother through you to her at the loss of her father. So, you know, keep reaching under the dumpster and offering the support and the presence of love, and when your twinges of pain come forward, you heal you so that you become truly the light of the world and can offer that space of love, whatever somebody's going through. That's
okay,
the truth about
thank
that.
You very much.
Bigness of who. That's the bigness of who each of us is when we claim
and
it.
And your analogy of the child, I really can feel and relate to that. And, yes, I would never give up. And I've had that child pull away from me and say, leave me alone, don't touch me. And I wouldn't give up then, and I'm not going to give up now.
I join you in that. We're down to the last few seconds. The show's going to cut us off, so I'll just say we're holding the space. We appreciate you. Everybody have the best year yet of your eternal lives. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.